come out saying, you know, he uses the same example, you know, that Getchus does. So, that'd be fun. I would really like to see a thorough scholarly thing done on that. You know, we've got some some things have been put into the book on glottality, on the tongues on trial on that issue. But I'd like to have a real good, reference work we'd have in the library on that.
Which issue then?
Aorist participle, and use of the aorist participle. That'd be a perfect one for that class I'd like to have someday, in advanced Greek and Hebrew studies, Yes. Okay. Want to give you some more detail on the quiz coming up, grammar test. What I told you yesterday is pretty much accurate, although I do have some questions on pause forms. Nothing on numbers, so you don't have to worry about that. But the pausal forms on page 202, you need to be familiar with A, B, and C categories here for the normal way that things are put in pause. In other words, if it ends in a pothoc and it's in pause, it'll go to comets. Some cigalate nouns will go from the cigal on the first syllable to a comets. And then this category C with this vowel combination here, getting a lengthening, getting another comets or zeri. So, and that suffix eka, you should probably be familiar with that one. The sigol getting on eka rather than eka. So just be familiar with those pausal forms. And then what else? The other things I told you, just the pu'al forms of gudal. And again, it'll be like the last test. I'll tell you, I'll ask you for the form. And it won't be a matter of recognizing forms, but forming forms, which is much harder. And then the hifil forms of hishmid. And then the five categories of the meanings of the hifil you should be familiar with. And then those pause forms, and then translation. That'll be it. So by way of review, we were going through this yesterday, and I'll finish this today before we get into those exercises. We were in lesson 43 on the hifil, looking at the various classes of meanings. And we have the causative, of course, the permissive, which is no real big difference between that and causative. It's just a matter of context. The stative or intransitive is perhaps the most unusual one, taking a stative verb and putting it in the hifil and still having a stative verb. Then the denominative is taking nouns, basically, and making them into verbs. And like the verb to, the noun ear, and making it to give ear or listen, or the noun for evening, to do something in the evening. And then the unclassified, which is kind of lumps together everything we can't figure out what class to put it in. And it's usually because we don't know that there was no call root that was used that we can see clearly, or denominative form or something that we can trace it to. Okay. Then the rest of this is inflection. The regular, of course, hishmid, need to be familiar with, but the rest of the ones you don't. So your paradigm, page 213 and page 214 for hishmid is what you want to be familiar with. Yes?
I was wondering, for like hishmid, where you've got the, I think they're hollow, they just have the two consonants. I guess that's a hollow verb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how they paradigm out. Do they get a pathog under the double
radical?
I don't know.
Oh, you mean the rest of
it? Like, to put it, tibi, and then would it be tibi, tibi, and
yeah, hibita, hibit, so forth, yeah. In other words, the endings, once you get that first part of the stem, none of that's going to change, except the usually what happens is those long forms or the long suffixes, you're going to get something. But if it's a closed syllable...
Do you put a pass off under the base or the stem for like the second verb form? Singular.
Okay, now which verb are you looking at? Higit?
Either one. It's a hollow verb.
Okay.
And I was trying to do it in my mind, and I couldn't figure out. See, the one has three consonants, and these have two.
No, these are just, it's a one nun.
Okay, well, you're missing a consonant, though.
Yeah, well, you're missing the nun, and that's getting assimilated with the dagesh. And,
you put the pasak under the double, and you would, and then put a schwa under the third, and then just add the ending?
Yes.
So,
hibat, yes, hibat, yeah, same thing.
Okay,
yeah, keep that pathak there. And then the only difference is that you don't have another letter with a schwa on it. You just take that letter with a schwa out, and affect that double letter is going to effectively close the first syllable and start a new one.
So it's just a hibat,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hibat. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah, the vowel point was a schwa anyway in most of those forms, so it just gets gone. It just takes off, and the letter's gone, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Now, when we get to real live hollow verbs in Hifil, there'll be a whole new ball game. And three hays, and some, that's why Hifil is the nastiest one as far as what happens to these unusual forms. Some of them get so you can hardly tell. In fact, will we get to it? I don't know if we'll get to it today or not, but in chapter 46, when we get to the three hays, there are in the justice for the three hays where you get the apocopated form, the hay drops off. And some of the verbs, the form for the Hifil and the form for the call is identical in the justice, no difference whatsoever. So you can, you know. You have to go by context or, you know, look it up. Well, you, looking it up wouldn't help you. So you have to go by context to decide which one it was. If you looked it up, they may decide which one it was, but may not be right. Okay. So that's it as far as Lesson 43 is concerned, unless there's any questions. And but these paradigms, the reason they're not giving the rest of them is that once you get this problem that takes place, usually in the first syllable, then the rest of it is just added on accordingly. In other words, to make a substitution, just take your first form, like Hishmid, for example, and compare that with Higid. And it's the last part of the word that's going to be the same all the way through. The first part will be different consistently. And then you just put your endings on accordingly. Okay. Then Lesson 44... there's just more on the numbers. I'm not going to be going into detail on that or these other oddball forms. So there's nothing grammatically in Lesson 44 that will be on the test. The only thing there would be the translation that you need to be familiar with. Okay? And I could be nasty and not tell you any of this, but might as well be a little merciful. There's a lot of information here. Yes, Peter?
Writing out Ishmael. It goes to a pathak just like the previous chapter. For like the text first form, you have Hishma.
Okay, are you on... you're on this chapter 44 now. Okay, Hishmiya. Yeah. Right. And you probably put a shawa on the ayin there, just like you did when with your three hays. I mean, three gutturals in the call. They usually put a shawa on there, even though it's not pronounced. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's it as far as review. All you need to do now is memorize those forms and you'll be in good shape. Then the vocab quiz will be tomorrow. Right? Yeah. And on the vocab quiz, you don't need to worry about the numbers on it, just the ones at the end of the chapters. There's plenty of those.
I was wondering about the participle form for Hishmi. Like a plural.
Okay, with the meme?
Yeah.
Yeah, and informing the plurals?
Yeah, you, mashmiyahu, you have a
a-o
and
a-in. Oh, I see, with the I, yeah, mashmiyahu. You can go ahead and put an oath right on that, yeah, there won't be any problem. I don't think you'll need a shawa there now, though, because the cholam wa'al kind of act like the vowel point for the ayin. So, yeah, mashmiyot, mashmiim. Huh?
It also retains the patha.
Yes, on the front, yeah. Or, you, oh, I see, you mean the patha furtive? That, I think you're going to lose that, because that's just a patha furtive. So, it'd be mashmiyot, mashmiim, so forth. Yeah. Let me see if they give you anything here. Give the imperative, and that kind of does that. You know, mash, hashmi'u for the imperative, when you're adding shurik on, you just drop the pathak off.
Yeah, okay.
The only reason you need a pathak furtive is when it's the last letter and it glides into it. But once you get other things on there, you don't need it anymore.
Okay.
Good. Okay, anyone else? All right. Now you can see how many potential forms. Once we get to chapter 52 and we start putting object suffixes on things, you'll see that it's incredible how many different possible forms of a Hebrew verb there can be. Never-ending supply. Okay. Let's go to lesson 45 then. I believe we got through discussing this, went through the vocabulary, so I gave you number 1, number 7, number 14 under part A, and then all of part C on the Ten Commandments, so we'll go through that. And we'll start over with John again, number 1.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Shmidu
and Sha'are. Oops, where are we here?
That's 44, that's what the problem is.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering why.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I don't
know,
shorter.
Sorry about that.
And Har-Shari.
Mm-hmm.
Har-Shari. Hoshim, Bahoshek, Hoes, Atsadikin, Holik, Baor, Panao.
Okay. You probably, let's see, there's no method on that. It probably would be. It'd either be Horshaim or it would be Harishaim. It's the word for wicked, and I think it's Harishaim is what they want. I think he probably should have put a meseg there, but compensatory lengthening because you can't put the dagesh in the resh.
Anyone translation?
Yeah. To dwell. And this would be Hifil, so it would cause to dwell.
Got it.
And this is unusual because your object is first. Yeah,
so he caused
mm-hmm.
the evil ones to dwell.
Right.
In Hoshek is darkness.
Right, in darkness, exactly.
And the righteous ones.
Mm-hmm. This is from Paul.
He caused to go.
Yeah.
In the light of his face.
Yes, exactly. In the light of his face, or in the light of his presence, or countenance.
Okay.
Yeah, and you might put to walk there, to walk in the just because it's probably dealing with progressive,
okay.
You know, a life. So it could be go or walk. Okay, so he caused the wicked ones to dwell in darkness, but the righteous he caused to walk in the light of his face, in the light of his countenance. Yes.
And that verb form is the first, third person singular perfect?
Yeah, third person singular perfect, if heal, in both cases. So it would be he caused to walk or he caused to dwell. Okay. Good. Any questions? And you can see almost the contrast here, almost a poetic contrast, using the objects first in both cases. You know, the wicked he caused and the righteous he caused. It's contrast, antithesis.
The wood there would be probably better, but...
Yes, it probably would be. It's disjunctive. You can see that because it's not coming on a verb. And that may be part of the reason to put the objects first, is to set up that disjunction, set up that contrast. Yeah. Okay, number 7. Tony, do you want to take it or do you want to pass? Okay. Okay.
When you read that, I mean, where Achau?
Mm-hmm. Echau?
Echau.
Yeah, Mitzrayma. Mitzrayma. Okay, that first verb, it's from Yarav, to go down, but it's a hiphil. It's a hiphil converted imperfect. Justice. Did you get that one in this chapter? Yes, the verb is... Horeed would be the perfect form. To take down, to lead down, bring down. So assume it's a part of a continuing narrative.
Okay. I will take down my mother and my father. My father and my mother.
Okay, it's not first person though, so it's he. And he led down or his led down or took down his father and his brothers. His brothers plural there. Yeah, his father and his brothers. Egypt word or down to Egypt. In other words, and he led his father and his brothers down toward Egypt or so forth. That's the idea. And you're translating it in the past because it's a converted imperfect, which gives you perfect meaning. It's continuing the narrative sequence. Yes.
So for the hiphil confidence here, you don't need to say he caused bring down, but just adding on bring or lead or take.
Adding bring will give you causative. You could either say he caused them to go down, or you say he brought them down. Because bringing him is giving the idea, or taking him down, leading him down, something is the idea there. Or you could say he's caused them to go down to Egypt. That would be a little bit less committal, you know. You could cause somebody to go down to Egypt without going with them. But, given the context and so forth, and that's the way the verb is normally used, to bring down, to take down.
Joseph caused them to come down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in that case, yeah, if he's the subject of this, which I think he is, then he brought him down to Egypt. And he didn't come get him, but because of his command and so forth. Yeah. Okay, verse 14, or number 14. Price? Eric. I'm going to skip you there.
Ayukha, Kadosha, Asar, Ish, Vayatrev, Otam, El Kari.
Okay.
And he chose 30 men, and he approached them for the city.
Okay, yeah, approached them. He caused them to approach or brought them near to the city. You know, I think he gave presented also the possibility for that. But the idea is a cause to come near, cause to approach. Yeah. Should be. Let me see. Look again.
Oh, yeah, Karol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, grave would be, yeah, to cause to approach, to cause to come near. Maybe it was in the previous chapter that we had that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when he chose 13 men and he presented them unto the city or brought them near, caused them to approach unto the city. Okay. Good. That moves us to the reading then, the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20, verses 1 to 14. So verse 1, Price. A short one.
Yeah. Why did Bayer, Elohim, Abel, Saul, Adavarim, Adela, Mehor?
Okay.
And God spoke all these words saying.
Yes, and God spoke all these words saying. Good. Any questions there? Did Bear, of course, that is PL form, denominative PL, you might say, from the bar of the noun. Okay, number two, verse two, Doug.
The base.
Okay.
I am Yahweh your God, that caused you to go forth to Egypt, the house of bondage.
Okay, yeah. Or you could just repeat the from the house of bondage. It's caused you to go forth from the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they repeated the min on it, you know. You got May Eretz Mitzrayim and then May Beth Avadim. Okay, I am Yahweh your God who has brought you or caused you to go forth from the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. Okay, questions, anyone? Okay, verse 3, Peter.
Hello, Yishyeh, Elohim, Acherim, Al,
Tanai. Okay.
You shall not have other gods before me.
Right, good.
Was there something where we learned where you get the shall instead of just a future tense?
Yes.
With a negative
sense? Yeah, we had a prohibition was given with a, you know, low plus the imperfect. In other words, a negative command. So they use low or all if it's more of an immediate command, but a low kind of gives you more of a general command, and that's what's appropriate to this. So back in your chapter of imperatives, a negative imperative was done with low plus the imperfect. Okay, so we shall not. And literally, it's there shall not be to you. You know, there's the idiom, because, you know, that's the idiom for possession. So you translate it right. You shall not have other gods before me or beside me or up against me, all panai, you know, up against my face, you know, in competition. It's quite a graphic image there. You know, I can put it up, God's up against my face. Okay. What did they give all panai? Did they give that separately in the vocab? But they might have prepared you for that or something. But maybe it was a long time ago. Yeah. Okay.
Was it
Hayah
plus Lo that was the way you said that in
Kirk? Oh, to become. Yeah, Hayah plus Lo can mean to become. But here, you have to kind of watch the context on that, because in this case, you've got Hayah, but it's possession. There shall not be to you.
But did we learn, like, when we learned Yesh and the Ain, a way to say it past tense,
yeah,
negative with Hayah?
Yeah, the problem there is that those are not nonverbal type of things, yesh and so forth, and ain. This one, because they're wanting to place this in the future, there will not be to you. They're having to use a form of hayah. They have to make it verbal in order to get in the future. In other words, if you put it ain or yesh, lo, or just put ain laka, then you would have there is not to you. You know, you do not have any false gods or something, and that wouldn't be appropriate. He wants to make a command for the future, so that's forcing this hayah type of construction. Okay. Verse 4 then, John.
Lo ta'aseh l'ka besal we'll call temuna Asher Bashamayim Mima'av Wa'aser Wa'asher Wa'asher Ba'aretz Mitahak Wa'ashir Bamayim Metahah Tahah La'arat.
Okay.
That's strange that it would have they use a quiesce when you do that.
Which one?
La'arat.
Well, you have the article on this and the preposition. So remember, you had ha'aretz for the just putting the article, and then it's la'aretz with preposition la within the article.
It just seems funny.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that one was a peculiar one. That was an exception to the rule as far as the article is concerned. So that's why it sounds peculiar. At that time, you didn't know it sounded peculiar, but now that you've seen it used so many times the other way, it does look a little strange. Okay.
You shall not make for you an image.
Yeah, image or idol. Mm-hmm.
And every likeness which is in the heavens.
From above, something like that. From which is in the heavens, from above, heavens above.
Which is heavens from above?
Yeah, something like that. Above.
Now, this negation here is carrying over through the wood clause then.
Yes. Yeah, so you might say, nor, you shall not make for yourself an idol and any likeness, you know, in other words, it's and not any likeness, and not, you know, the not is applying to the whole thing, so
okay.
That's kind of, you know, you could translate it, you shall not make for yourselves an idol, nor any likeness which is in the heavens above,
okay.
Nor, you know, something like that.
Okay. Oh, okay. And, all right, and follow through with the nor,
mm-hmm.
which is in the earth, from under or below.
Yeah, below. Mm-hmm.
Nor which is in the waters.
Mm-hmm.
Below. From below.
Mm-hmm.
For the earth or to the earth.
Yeah, from below with reference to the earth. I think they gave you that idiom that sometimes uses llamas even after that. I thought we had that fairly recently.
Yeah, this chapter.
It was this chapter, okay. Yes, yeah. So above and below generally use preposition llamas following them.
The main isn't a from preposition. It's part of the word, right?
I'm trying to think now. Yeah.
They're
giving the whole thing as below and above. But I think there is a meme in there. I think it's still, it's got, it's from beneath, you know, it's got the idea below and from above, and, but you can just translate them above and below. But I think they are built, they're building a lot of prepositions from other prepositions. Okay, so you shall not make for yourselves an idol, nor or any likeness which is in the heavens above, or which is in the earth below, or which is in the waters above below the earth. Or you put nor in all those cases. You want to carry that through. Actually, it doesn't use the word or in the Greek. In the Hebrew, it just uses and. But in English, it's rather awkward for us to do that, to continue a series like that. If we did, we'd probably have to put the negative in each one just to make sure that we got the full force of it. So, kind of a matter of English versus Hebrew expression. Okay, verse 5. Tony, you want to take back that? Do you remember what the next commandment was? Third commandment? Well, actually, this one isn't a new commandment. He's just qualifying the previous one anyway. So. That's a good one. Tachweh, yeah. Tish Tachaweh. Ta'avdim, yeah, ta'avdim. Okay, good. Yeah, you have to pronounce the wow on this one. Awon. Okay, Shilashim. No, if you had a comma, if you had a pasuk on the sheen there, it would be. But just im here. Shilashim. Yeah, ayim would be the dual ending, and if you had a pasuk instead of a yod, a hirik to me, it would be. Okay, yeah. Let's see. That'd be lisonai, I guess. That's a good one. Whether you pronounce that lisonai, could be lisonai. That's probably better, lisonai. Well, no, that with that shawa on the first syllable, you can't really carry one that way. It'd have to be lison, and then stop it there, and then I. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good one.
That was far as me.
Yes.
I only traveled so far with the aid of the bottom of the side and everything else. And you shall not bow down to them.
Right.
And you shall not serve them.
Right.
Because there's something like this. We're talking about an okay man.
Aye.
Aye. Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. I am Yahweh. You probably press supply a verb to be. It's a predication. Okay. Anoki Yahweh. I am Yahweh.
I am Yahweh. Your God, a God of jealousy.
Okay, a jealous God, yeah.
And then I go 3 lines in a row.
Yeah, this one's kind of... Pokade is visiting. It's a participle. Like we had Pakaz to visit, and they gave to visit and a bunch of possible translations for it. But... if you want to pick up a King James translation, visiting. Yeah, iniquity. Visiting the iniquity. And this is a defective.
Why does it have not a comma, but a reduced pathos?
Oh, it's construct. Yeah, it's construct of what follows. Yeah. There's always a reason. Sometimes you don't know what it is, but. Okay, visiting the iniquity of
the fathers
on
the son.
Okay. Yes? Upon visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children or the sons, you know, literally the son.
On 30.
Okay, this Shilashim would be the third. This is that ordinal number. Upon the third. Yeah, there's. We better go double back and review that. For, okay. So it's upon the third.
So it's on the third. And on last
two and blank. Okay. Do you remember the verse? He's from English, you think? Yeah, right. You got it. Okay.
Okay.
Actually, yeah, but generation isn't actually, it's upon the third and upon the fourth, and then to the haters of me, to my haters.
Oh.
It's to ones who hate me. See, sanat, to hate. And this is an infinitive construct with a suffix. So, to my haters.
I thought it was for my hatred.
For my hatred?
I
oh, okay. I think, let's see, to those who hate me.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ambiguity if it's before.
Yeah, so whether it's object or subject,
one's
yeah.
Hating the man or
yeah. The ones hating me or my haters. And usually the ones, you know, my haters would be the ones that are hating me. In other words, there is an ambiguity there, yeah. So you have to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it is a plural there, so they're personifying it. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this last night, the verb vocate.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning visiting the guilt of the fathers. And literally, the first definition he gave for vocate is to keep the promise.
Uh huh.
What do you think God's always saying here? Because I'll visit the iniquity.
Well, I think that what it really means is he's holding man responsible for it. In other words, he's what did they give for the first idea there? To keep the promise or something? Yeah. There's in other words, he's really going to actually hold man responsible. He's not going to be distant. He's going to be pressing this issue. And so that's kind of the idea, visiting it or, you know, causing it to be in a very personal way or, you know, keeping this promise may not be, in this case, it's not positive, it's negative. But since he's promised to bring judgment, you know, now he's making good on that promise, as it were. So, I don't know if there's an English equivalent to this word. You know, it's really a tough one to give a simple English equivalent to. But in other words, he's demanding and holding man accountable in a very personal way. For these things, in this case, it's accountability that's the issue. In another case, it might be a positive thing where God's going to bring blessing, or He's going to, you know, personally be there to accomplish what His will is, and so forth. In other words, I get the feeling it's not a distant God, afar off, but He's there doing what He's promised to do, either positively or negatively. Okay. That old King James visiting sounds pretty good. You know, we're used to that. I think the reason we've read that enough in King James, that even though we don't use that expression now, we've gained a kind of a sense for the meaning of it from the King James
visiting
context.
Visiting kind of fits, and, you know, the way it happens, you know, a father comes along and he commits a sin, and so many times his own children
yeah.
fall
yeah.
into
sure.
the same way that kind of
sure.
They have reference to the
well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's some a lot of theological implications here as to what it means when it says. I think it usually has the idea of the not that the sons are going to bear the responsibility for their father's sin. The scripture teaches clear against that, but they bear the sufferings and the difficulties that are the results of their parents' sins. The environment that's created by their parents' sins is the environment they grow up in. And the demons that their parents had, the demons they grew up in contact with and seeing manifest all the time and so forth. So I think that's really the major connection. And then, of course, the nation's judgment. You know, if the parents sinned and the Assyrians came and took them captive, you know, the children are captive with the rest and they grow up in captivity because their parents sinned. And that may last for a number of generations.
If you take it in the connection of all states, not in Roman faith, though, there's a possibility to it, looking at it from the other perspective. Sin as well as in our members.
Well, yes, there's a certain element there, but you have to be real careful you don't get into this original sin idea there. There's the effects, the example, the environment. Yeah, yeah.
Not
from the demon. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
That's not saying that poor original sin might have taken its left turn off.
Uh-huh.
But it's true.
Sure.
You know, it's not original sin passed on, but this thing inside people continues it.
Yeah, there's a question as to how it's passed on. Is it passed on genetically, or is it passed on through, you know, the influence, the environment, and so forth? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Back on that.
Yes. Gotta be real careful here.
Shalish Shim and Rebeim. Now, this is kind of taking a substantive upon, or is it modifying? Is it really upon the third sons and the fourth sons?
Yes, I think it's upon the sons, the third and the fourth. You know, that's where they get the idea of generation.
So you could.
It is still substantive, though, in effect. The third ones and the fourth ones.
Follow the wording, then you would maybe substantize them a little bit, say upon the third one.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, upon the sons, upon the third ones, and upon the fourth ones. That's kind of literally what it is.
And the
ones referring back to the sons.
And then that final word there.
Mm-hmm.
This sone. Ow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a participle there?
Yeah, it looks like a participle. Would it be a participle or a infinitive construct?
Yeah.
The haters of me. I'm not sure on that. I have to check that, because it might be an infinitive construct that's substantivized, too. Usually when you've got this kind of a suffix, hating me, it's more appropriate to an infinitive construct than it is to a participle, because a participle is generally going to, you know, the ones hating or this or that, not having the object on it.
Right.
Yeah.
How do we know that generation? Could he just be referring to the third and fourth son that he had?
Yes, I suppose I don't know, though. It's possible that there may be another parallel passage that uses the same phrase and uses door, uses generation. I'm not certain of that. If not, then it would be just a customary expression, and it referring to sons, plural, the third ones and the fourth ones. I suppose you could say maybe it's within each family, the third and fourth son. That seems, yeah, number one and two are fine, third and fourth, they're in trouble. I think the semantics of it, you know, kind of generates the difference there. It may be, though, that there's a place where door is used and it qualifies it, so there's no question. It looks like the kind of expression that's been shortened and it's customarily used, and so they're gaining sense of it. Okay, come up with a real different theological point here. Yeah. Okay, that way my youngest brother has all those problems. No. Okay, is you have a question there, John, or is that okay? Good. Number six, verse six. Who's up next? Where do we leave off here? We got entangled in a maze here. Are you next, Eric? Okay. You always get us into controversies, Tony.
Alafim.
Ulo Shomre. Okay.
Making through context.
Mm-hmm.
He was making kindness to thousands, loving me.
Yes.
And keeping my commandments.
Okay. Good. Continuing that same imagery now with the participle and then with these infinitives. So we had bokeh up there, now we've got osah. So he was visiting and so forth, now he's doing kindness, doing good, doing kindness to the thousands, to those loving me, and to those keeping my commandments, literally to the keepers of my commandments. And this one, you do have the participle and then plural construct and then commandments, to the keepers of my commandments. And then to those loving me, that looks like an infinitive again with that suffix, object suffix on it.
That's what it's loving me.
Hmm? Well, it's loving me.
Okay.
Yeah, because you've got the I there in the end. To those loving me.
Because of my love again.
Yeah, that's not an easy one. I almost wish we could look back at that chapter on those infinitive constructs just to review that, if I can remember which chapter it is. Because we really haven't seen very many of them used this way. And
Shorten, otherwise, common.
Yes, that's what I want to check on that, as far as, you know. You know that in the English you want to translate it into plural. Okay, uses infinitive construct, back here, chapter, lesson 28. Yeah. Okay, but that doesn't have a suffix on it. That's what we're seeing there as far as the lamas. Commonly used with lamas. Participle. But you need this as the object. That's the only way it's going to work. Am I killing the man? It's a similar kind of an idea. I'd parse this form fully out here. Why don't you check it and we'll just quickly find out what its base is.
This is an indirect object?
Yeah, to the one, so the lama's there because it's an indirect object. And this may be considered a participle. It's the thing I want to check. It's either participle or infinitive construct. The trouble is, see, we haven't had something yet. We haven't had the pronominal suffixes, object suffixes, and that's why I'm a little questioning whether he would throw that in there without giving you explanation for what it is yet.
So
you can. Yeah, that may be at the vowel points. See, this ahav is such a weird verb anyway. You can't be too confident what's happening on that one. Let's see. What if I can find the form? It's one of those five verbs. Well, it's not one of those five. It's one that's even irregular and has mixed types beyond that.
I thought the verb was always the one. The verb was always it. Like his writing, your writing,
mm-hmm.
loving, your, my loving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall when we had.
It's the participle.
Okay, it's a participle. Okay. Well, then what he's done here is he's put a form in he hasn't really told you about yet. He should have had a footnote on it because you haven't had suffixes on object suffixes on participles yet. Yeah, maybe you could generalize it. That's what it is. That's why I thought maybe infinitive construct. But really, infinitive construct doesn't quite fit the bill either because you don't substantivize those. And that's the problem. Here we've got something substantivized. So that other one above would be the same category there. Participle with the object suffix on it, which you haven't had yet. So technically, he should have put a footnote on this. Because we really haven't had it. We will get it a little bit later on, but the suffix, object suffix, is stuck onto the thing. So it does mean literally to those loving me. And
what was the last two phrases? The last phrase?
The last phrase of verse 6?
Yes.
And to those keeping my commandments.
Okay, how is that? Commandments has the thing.
It's my commandments. That's just a plural form for commandments. Mitzvot plus, you know, the pafak yod is the suffix for first person. So my commandments. But the other is in the construct.
Yeah.
The shomerei be the to the ones keeping to the ones who are the keeping of my commandments, something like that. To the keepers of my commandments, that'd be the best way to say it. To the keepers of my commandments.
Yeah, I missed how that was substantivized. The keeping of my commandments.
Okay, it's substantivized because it's a plural form. See, it's shomer would be your participle form.
Oh, okay.
Keeper, and then shomerim would be your and plural form, then shomare would be the plural construct form, keepers of.
But now,
and then the purpose
is there may be ambiguity.
Huh?
If it was singular, there may be ambiguity. It could just be shomare in construct and not a.
Yeah, it could be to the keeper of my commandments if he just had shomare there.
And that might be ambiguous with the keeping of my commandments.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so, because when you have a construct like this, I see what you're getting at.
Participle
is that the suffix
is always like is self-defined mean a participle becoming like a noun?
Yeah, see, a participle is technically a verbal adjective, and it's normally used like as an adjective, but it's often used by itself as if it were a noun. And
oftentimes an adjective.
Yes, it'll be used as an adjective,
like
too.
Keeping. It could be keeping.
Uh-huh, a keeping commandment or something like that, or a keeping God, or a God who's watching.
Keeping
his
commandments is good or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also...
Well, that would keeping his commandments is good, that would be more infinitive there. Then you want an infinitive for that. But, for example, if you were talking about a God, a watching God or something like that, then you could use shomer, modifying God. But here it's used as a substantive, and then it's pluralized, and then... Of my commandments. The commandments, of course, is the thing that's got the suffix on it. And see, there's no way to work it out the other way. My keepers of commandments wouldn't work. They try to word that a completely different paraphrastic way because you can't put the suffix on something in construct. I think that point was brought up before. They just such a construction is avoided in Hebrew or something, the way it is. Okay, good. Well, that'll solve the riddle for us, because that...
I've missed every one of these so far. It never occurred to me that it was a substantive noun.
Yeah, that's what it is, a substantivized noun, participle, which makes it a noun.
Yeah.
Very common to use participles that way.
Okay.
And, but this one feature here with the participle with the suffix is quite interesting, because he didn't footnote it.
Mm-hmm.
So my mind kept trying to go back to things you have had, and it came up wrong here.
So,
okay.
So,
question?
So now, Russian
the Okavai, yeah, that would be. Right. Well, those are also substantivized participles.
Yeah, those two. And then
Le Chomere would be a substantive participle in construct that doesn't have an object suffix on it. The other two have object suffixes on them, which is different than what you've had before. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. But see, that list on now, the last word of verse 5, to those that hate me, that'd be the same thing. It'd be a participle with a object suffix, hate me. That's where the I comes from. So it's kind of unusual. I mean, it's not unusual once you get in these later chapters, but it's unusual because we haven't had anything like that yet. Unless there was a little blurb someplace back here already about participles with object suffixes. There might have been.
He's still footnoting
all those. Yeah, he's usually footnoting the new things, and it's, you know, I get... To, I can't remember. You sure?
No.
Okay. Yeah, we've seen them as substantives before. That's no problem. But to have the participle... Oh, boy.
Just kind of extending thinking about nouns.
Uh-huh. Well, it would be hard to know that you're writing these sentences and what exactly happened
that
you already know all.
Right. I'm sure that that's the problem.
The design exercise.
Yeah. I know when I have to write quizzes and stuff and for translation, that's, you know, you've got to really stop and think sometimes, what have they had and what have they haven't had. And I have to try to put myself with you, you know, in teaching it. I have to kind of try to forget what's coming and place myself back. And otherwise, you can get really, the students get really confused. So, well, that's what we have. There should have been a footnote on it then. So in your translation, you mean just note the way it should be translated, the haters, my haters, those that hate me, or the keepers of my commandments, and that'll settle it for your translation. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We'll finish this up tomorrow after the quiz. Vocab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those
would
be easy when we get to them. We've seen so many of them.
Yeah, right. No, he's just preparing you. He's trying to soften up the road in front of the troops.
There's three or four, and the next size you don't know it is.
Sure. But you can see this much. You can see that the suffixes are basically the kinds you've had before, not a whole new series of suffixes. And so it's not going to be that much of a trauma, I don't think.
I listened a little bit in the airphone.
Uh-huh.
I think I might have looked at it. Yeah, it's referred to a lot in the commentaries when I deal with mm-hmm. Dick, because he has written something on it in his liberal, of course, but
right.
it's really good in grammar. But it's interesting because he has a lot of notes about the meaning and the emphasis and things like that.
Good. Does he have paradigms all set in the one section?
Yeah, some paradigms. So.
Mm-hmm. It's somewhat like Marx and Rogers, the way it's laid out, and Davidson too.
Yeah. I read Brown Driver and Briggs, or I think it was Briggs. No, Driver made a kind of scholarly thesis on the word tenses in Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
and he has mentioned that. Yeah, well, we have good
relationships.
I think of close relationships.
Oh, yes.
But he wasn't so good on these. One particular thing that he was really good. Of the structure that he was.
Okay, he looks like he's got some real good paradigm charts and so forth here, too. And he's, of course, putting your derived verbs together, comparing those.
Yeah,
it's all PL, 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 so forth.
How he structured his language and how he thought about it and conceptualized it. Relating, and I was looking into this. He had a real different setup on how to word formation and how he just handled the class.
Good. For those that don't Hebrew already.
History of the alphabet, that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. It's good to compare a lot of these books. Once you've been through one, so you've got an idea of where you're going and you know what it represents, it's good to go through and compare things.
Yeah, kind of does make some notes to that grammar and
the examples. Mm-hmm. When did Ewald live?